the contagious diseases that led you to write this book, of course, tell me a little bit about them, because you talk about six epidemics when you write When Germs Travel.
Right. And, the thing about epidemics, they're really fun to write about and to read about because they're stories. You know, they have beginnings, they have middles, and they have ends. Particularly the ends are pretty flat and not as exciting as we'd like them to be. But they're wonderful stories with, you know, doctors and patients and even the germs themselves, which are living beings and have personalities, if you will. You know, different germs act differently on the body, of course. So I wanted to look at six major epidemics in American history because I write about America. You know, I write about American medicine, and that have occurred between, you know, 1900 and all the way to 2000, or even more recently than that, as we saw with SARS.
Mm-hmm.
And to tell those stories and to show that there are a lot of features in common. There's far more in common than out of sync. For example, these epidemics cause panic. The ones that are more sudden, that seem to come out of nowhere and are new, cause much more panic than the ones that we have a lot of experience with. So compare the reaction we had to SARS or the few cases of anthrax a year earlier compared to TB, where, you know, as we said earlier in the show, about 400 people will die of tuberculosis in the last hour, every hour.
400?
It's about 400 per hour. Yeah, it's 1,500 per hour of AIDS, TB, malaria, diarrhea, and a few of the other infectious diseases every hour. And we don't really think about those compared to SARS. There were 8,000 cases worldwide and 800 deaths, now, roughly. Now, as you said earlier, you know, the death of anybody is a tragic thing, but the response in terms of how lay people, public health, and media responded to SARS was quite incredible. You also have closing down of cities or ports. You know, you have this in the Black Plague of the Middle Ages. In fact, that's where the term quarantine comes from. It really means, it comes from the Italian words quarante giorno, which is 40 days. And you would close a port when plague was raging for 40 days and hope that it would burn itself out.
Well, and look what they did to Toronto during the SARS epidemic.
Exactly. And so you bring back, you know, quarantine, you say the word before, if you said that word before last spring, to most people, boy, that belongs in a museum or one of those dusty old books. And in fact, we brought it back out because SARS is transmitted by breathing, coughing, sneezing, and so on. And so it was an unreasonable thing to do. You see, the media was invented yesterday, 100 years ago, since the printing press and mass media was developed in the 19th century. And then it was aided and abetted by transoceanic cables, you know, telegraphic cables, so you could get dispatches from Hamburg or Paris or Tokyo. And you also had, you know, most large cities. I'm in San Francisco right now on this book tour for When Germs Travel.
Right.
And so San Francisco used to have about 5, 6, 7 papers 100 years ago, and they all had about 8 to 10 editions a day. And they would be updated. So if you were reading about bubonic plague in San Francisco in 1900, and there was indeed an epidemic, that's one of the early chapters of my book, you would be reading about plague all the time. And so there's that component to it. There's frequently a scapegoat. Some group, it's frequently a group that the dominant society doesn't like very much or fears. It's almost always blamed for that epidemic, and we see that time and again. So this bubonic plague epidemic in 1900 was blamed on the Chinese immigrants of San Francisco. AIDS in the early 80s was highly associated not only with gay men, but intravenous drug users.
Right.
And you may forget this story, and I talk about it in the book When Germs Travel, is Haitians. Because a lot of Haitians were in the early cases, and they underwent a great deal of stigma and were very fearful, both unhealthy and healthy Haitian immigrants.
Well, are you saying that those groups of people were singled out on purpose, or that these diseases truly are affecting them?
Well, they weren't singled out on purpose. It's just that there was an association at that time. It's not necessarily causal. For example, there were a lot of Haitians early in the early part of the epidemic of AIDS that had HIV, but it was about 8% of people living on Haiti at the time. But that doesn't mean that all Haitians have HIV.
Right.
And a lot of healthy Haitians at that time felt very prejudiced against it. They couldn't get into schools. They couldn't shop in certain grocery stores in Florida and Brooklyn, where they lived, you know, a lot of big Haitian populations in America, and so on. But, you know, sometimes, this is the problem, sometimes epidemic diseases, contagious diseases, tend to cluster around a certain social group. But the problem is when that social group in question is a group that already has a lowered status on the pecking order of that society, it's a very unhealthy combination.